My name's Debbie, I'm an addict.
Hello, Debbie.
I'm really glad that I've got really bad eyesight because you're all a blur. Yeah. And apart from the front row that's freaking me out completely. yeah, my name's Debbie and I'm an addict, and I'm 4 years, 7 months and 13 days clean today.
Well done.
And 10 hours. And when I'm trying, I've made some notes tonight. I've never done that before when I've shared, but it's because I find it really hard to get vulnerable and get real, not because I don't want to, but because I'm so good at putting a mask on, and it happens almost without, well, it happens without me wanting it to happen, and I'm hoping this is going to help. what happens is I get scared and the mask comes on, and then I can't, it's like using, I can't remember what I'm saying, I'm not aware of what I'm saying, I fly into this defence mode, and it's brrr, and, you know, I haven't got a clue, what I've said, I don't know if I've said what I wanted to say, so, and I really want to get vulnerable, it's just I don't know how, and I'm 51, and I was 46 when I came in, and I'm just learning how to be me, really. At 51, you know, I don't know what I'm like. From being 16, I was always known as the loud one, the party girl. You know, I could keep going longer than anyone else. I could do everything more than everyone else. And I don't remember any other way than that. When I first came into NA, it was the first time when I confessed that I was shy that people didn't say, no, you're not, because I am. I'm really, really shy, and I'm allowed to be shy in NA, which is a great blessing for me, and every day that I'm in recovery is a great blessing for me, however hard it is, because it feels like I'm aware of everything that's going on. I'm there for people. I'm there for myself, and you know, I've got this opportunity to get vulnerable and get honest. When I first came in, what got me clean, helped me get clean in the first place, were three sayings, and they still work for me every day. One's too many, a thousand's never enough. That so works for me. It worked when I gave up smoking as well 3 years ago. I accept the things I can't change. And the most important one for me, the turning point for me, was hearing the advice to try and seek to understand rather than be understood. And that has changed my life, that one saying, actually, because it's helped me go from blaming everybody else for what was wrong with me and the sadnesses in my life to just letting everyone off the hook and letting myself off the hook, therefore. And it's made life a lot easier. I was always an addict. Listen to the similarities, not the differences. I love the fact there are similarities in here. I worry when I'm doing a share that my similarities are not the same as yours, that I'm not good enough, that I'm not enough of an addict, that I'm going to say something stupid and you're all going to think I'm stupid, you know, that and actually, I have to remind myself that the truth is this is the safest place I've ever been. I started drinking, smoking, gambling when I was 16. And I didn't find the true love of my life till I was 34, actually, and that was drugs. Oh, my God. You know, that was it. That was how I had always wanted to feel. That was how I should feel. I thought, this completes me. This is just fantastic. And I then had 12 years. Well, no, I had 10 years where I could go out, because with drugs inside me, I could go out and chat to everyone. And I could often remember what I'd been doing, which made a big change. You know, I didn't black out as much as I had done on other stuff. And I didn't spend all my money like I did when I was gambling. And so drugs for me were the answer for 10 years. And I managed to make my life work. I had a career still. I had a marriage. In fact, I got married. I had a baby. And it all was working really, really well. But what happened was I had this trigger. I was in such denial, I didn't know I had a problem. And I now realise that from the age of 16, I'd drunk and I'd gambled and I'd eaten. Oh, I was enormous at one point because I just used to eat food. I used to go home from work on a Friday night and sit alone in my flat and eat and not answer the phone and not wash and not do anything and go back into work on Monday morning, bright as a button, and pretending everything was all right. And so food, drink, gambling, and then drugs. And for the first time when I started taking drugs, I had someone to do it with, which was my husband, my then husband. And so that was another reason it felt good, because it wasn't me doing something all on my own. but I'd always been doing something to change my feelings, to avoid my feelings. And I only realised that that's what had happened. I only realised now when my dad died. I'm an only child, and I was really ridiculously close to my dad. And he died 7 years ago. And I'd been going, my illness had been progressing. My using had been getting worse because there were lots of little niggly problems coming up in my life. But it didn't matter because, you know, I was coping with this. I was going to work, I was getting the drugs, and I was drinking, and, you know, I was managing it all. Then my dad died, and I completely fell apart. And I had 2 years of madness. And the reason was I had nothing inside me. I had nothing inside me. So from before I could remember, I hadn't actually known how to feel anything. I had nothing to fall back on. No spiritual sense of who I was. My memory of myself before recovery is constantly reacting to other people. What did they want of me? Trying to get their attention. trying to please them. Trying to impress them. And all the while, not quite managing it. And so trying even harder. It was exhausting. My parents... absolutely. I had this bizarre thing, wonderful, amazing, spectacular people, hard act to follow. And very, very interested in each other, but not so interested in me. But they had this bizarre way of wanting, they were over-controlling, but they weren't interested. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of left to get on with my own stuff, as long as it was in the corner of the room reading a book while they did what they were doing, or tagging along with them with what they were doing. And then if I tried to go and do something on my own, I wasn't allowed to. So it was an over-interest in what I wanted to do and a lack of interest in what I was doing. So it was constantly... I have this recurring dream now, actually, about my dad. And I find him in a room. I walk into a room and he's there and I say, oh, you're alive. You're alive. And I can't get his attention. And it was like that. And, you know, they're lovely people. But they weren't great parents in that sense. They just were, you know, they just, I'm a parent now and my friends are parents and we're different with our children. You know, we listen to them, we're interested in them, we talk to them and we spend time with them because we like being with them. It's different. And for a long time I thought it was their fault. When my dad died, I blamed my mother for everything because I was on my dad's side. And I actually told her that I wish she'd died instead of him. At one point, and you know, awful, awful. And she wasn't the greatest mother, thank you already. She wasn't the greatest mother, but you know, she's lovely. She loves me as much as she can love me, and that's what recovery has given to me. Accept the things I can't change, you know, see what I have got, not what I haven't got, has been a really massive thing for me. And she and I have worked this out a lot in the last 4.5 years, and she's not an addict. But she loves the fact that I'm in recovery and she's interested in how it works. And I've stopped punishing her and she's stopped punishing me. And I've learned to live. I'm learning to live without my dad and this new version of it. I just still don't know who I am. I've got a sponsor who I've had for just over a year who's fantastic. And it took me that long to get a sponsor that I really had to unravel to. I was in my third year. I'd had a sponsor, but I had somebody who I knew wouldn't challenge me so that I didn't have to. It was a gay man, actually, who just thought I was marvellous and didn't tell me to do anything that I didn't want to do. And he's lovely, but, I was definitely in control of that situation. But it worked for me. I felt less than for a long time because I hadn't done the step work and I'd done 1, 2, 3 twice. and I have to confess, I'm still on step four, and I'm in my fifth year of recovery. But my experience is, I chose my new sponsor because she sets rules, and I have to do it. I have to do what I'm told, and I like that. I want to do what I'm told, and I'm getting vulnerable in a way that I never have before because I've. And it's really scary, and it just feels like if only I'd known this 20 years ago, you know. But what the step work that I have done so far, and what my I do at least 5 meetings a week, I do my readings every day, I pray now, and it feels amazing. And now, when my mum is a bit of a cow to me, I think, I just, that thing of seek to understand how she's feeling instead of always, what am I feeling? It's like magic. It's unbelievable. And one of the things I'm going through at the moment, it's equipped me. What it's done is it's giving me tools to live my life. And at the moment, I've got this thing that's only just coming up now because I'm just getting really vulnerable. And my son went to live with my husband when I went into treatment. And I've been in denial about this for the last 4 years because I've had this weird situation where I go to my ex-husband's house every day and I'm there when my boy gets in from school and I cook his dinner and I do his homework with him and wash his clothes and then I leave at 7 and my ex-husband gets home at 7:30 and I go back to where I live. And that has enabled me to pretend that I am a proper mum, you know, and that he lives with me. And not to face up to that pain and shame. I feel a lot of shame about it. And the last 3 weeks, my ex-husband's not been working. So yeah, I haven't needed to be there. I haven't been allowed to go to the house. And I've been having to meet my son in Pizza Express and stuff like that. I've had a choice. I could have gone deeper into denial about it and not told anybody. And I haven't. And it's because I feel confident about my sponsor first. And then this is the third meeting I've said this out loud at. And it's really difficult. And he doesn't live with me. And I have to say goodbye to him when he goes home. And I don't know if he's washed his trousers for school. You know, I don't know that stuff. And I feel a lot of shame about that. He's never going to live with me again. He never is. Things will probably get back to normal when my husband goes back to work, my ex-husband. But that's fine. What I've got to focus on, what I'm going to focus on, is what I have got. And I have got him in my life. We have a really strong relationship. My ex-husband lets me go to his house. My mum and I are close. I have actually got so much. I've got this. You know, and I couldn't have done this before. I couldn't. I was eaten up with bitterness and resentment and anger. And, you know, I don't have to be like that anymore. And I haven't got that much time left, you know, being an old git. And so I'm determined. This is it. This is what I've been searching for my whole life. And to any newcomers in the room, you know, what a relief. What a relief to be in here. What a relief to live like this and to just have let myself off the hook. So I hope that's made sense and been of some use to you. And thanks for letting me share.